everybody. Welcome to Murder Mamas. I'm Artis. And Cheryl will not be with us this time. You've probably picked up that she is a teacher. She is a teacher of special needs kids. She is putting in 12-hour days, working on the weekends. She also has her own special needs kid that she has to deal with on top of her elderly parental figure. She's super busy. She has no time to research these things, and it's hard for either one of us to set aside 2 hours of our days just for travel. So for the time being, it's just going to be me. It could possibly be my son or my daughter and her fiance, or just my daughter, or maybe my kitty cats. So we'll see how it goes. I'm going to try to do this once a week. If not, it will be like, you know, be a week to 2 weeks. We'll just see. We'll see how it goes. No pressure on anyone. If you could, just let me know what you think and tell a friend for sure. Try to give us a good rating that would keep us going until, you know, Cheryl could get back. All that stuff. So, and another thing I wanted to mention, I have seen Cheryl's apartment when I go over there. It is filled to the brim with things for her kids that she has purchased out of her own pocket because the schools have no money for anything like sensory objects that help them settle down. She bought them little rocking chairs that when they get too much energy, you know, and they just need help to stay in their seat, they could still move around. Things like that, you know. Teachers need help with that stuff, and if you have some extra money or know people that do, a great thing to donate to is your local school's teachers, and you can look those up online. I'm sorry, I should have had some information for you so that you could look it up easy, but maybe I'll put that in the show notes or whatever on Instagram. So anyway, on to our story. I had planned on doing a creepy Halloween episode. And when I was looking up the story, it is something, you know, a portion of it did happen on Halloween, and probably the worst portion of this person's crimes, but it's not the only thing that he's done by far. So let's get into the crimes of the East Coast Rapist, also known as Aaron Thomas. He was born on the East Coast in 1971. His father was a DC police officer, and his mom worked for an insurance company. They were a middle-class family. They were big on education, and he had a half-brother and half-sister. They were his mom's children. Aaron was the only biological son of Don Thomas, also known as Big Don. Big Don and Aaron did not get along very well. Big Don was a strict taskmaster. He did not hold back with beatings with his police belt. He would slam Aaron into walls. They had screaming matches. It was just constant turmoil for the whole family. And that is per the direct family members. Michael is Aaron's brother, and he says that his dad was very strict, and you just didn't do anything wrong, or there was hell to pay. Aaron was the family comedian, but he probably had special needs. He was unable to control himself. He had no impulse control. He was unpredictable is how they classified him. So I certainly know how that goes. He started acting out in first grade. He took his Aaron at one point, super glued his brother's hands to his bed. He also gave his brother sleeping pills because he wanted to see what that would do to his brother. Another incident was they had a hole dug because they were putting some fence posts in, and it had rained, and there was standing water in that hole, and he took his little Lhasa Apso dog, which, if you don't know, it's a short little, you know, short legs, long hair, and put it in the hole, face first and the dog almost drowned, but they were able to save him. Another incident was while at a family member's home for the 4th of July holiday, he let off fireworks in their house, causing a fire. He also got angry with a student at school, and this was in grade school. It doesn't really say. It was before like middle school, so it was anywhere from first to fifth grade. There was a student swinging on the swing, and he got mad at that student and took the chain and beat the student with the chain of the school or of the swing. And those are some pretty thick chains. That's pretty horrible. He got suspended for that action. On the other hand, his brother Michael was aware of how the father was, but it didn't let that prevent him from being a good student and moving forward in life. He became a Marine, and he was on the front line in the Persian Gulf War. Aaron, on the other hand, was sent to a psych facility when he accidentally set a girl's hair on fire. This was his freshman year. He spent his first 3 years of high school at the Edgemead Treatment Center. This was in the late 80s. And at that time, students went there who had severe depressive orders and ADHD. And it was a last resort for many students, as it was for Aaron. It was a 40-minute commute each way, every day, on a bus, one other student. And he went there for 3 years. And according to the director of the school at that time, he claims that that is an exceptionally long time to attend the school compared to the usual students. Now, there was no diagnosis provided because apparently the documents, the records, the school records had been destroyed. So unfortunately, I mean, that would be super interesting to see what they claimed his diagnosis was. On Aaron's 20th birthday in 1991, his father, Big Don, retired as a lieutenant from the police force. Big Don then became a harbor master, and he was responsible for enforcing regulations in his harbor area. So he was sort of the policeman, you know, still a authority figure, policeman type in that area. Big Don was embarrassed by Aaron's run-ins with the law. That included stealing and fighting. And Big Don would not go to the police station. He just couldn't do it. He was too embarrassed. So he would always have Aaron's mom go down to the station and get him out. And she would say of Aaron that he was a good boy. He always made her laugh. He did things, but he always apologized for him. That's about the only comment that I got from the mom. Big Don would, around that time, he would tell his family members that he was afraid that Aaron would turn out like his brother. So Big Don's brother, Aaron's uncle, who was serving a lengthy prison sentence for murder. So this is an interesting case for the nature versus nurture argument, because Big Don has some anger issues, obviously, and his one biological son, Aaron, also has issues. And his stepson, who has been around the same abuse as Aaron, you know, has gone the other way. So very interesting, I thought. In his early 20s, Big Don kicked Aaron out of their home, and this is in the early 90s. He had no job, no money, and no place to stay. And he ended up living in a pet store that had caught on fire and was abandoned. And he would go in there, and he found himself a little corner and built up a wall around it, and that became his home. It doesn't say how long he stayed there, but I believe it was a little over a year. So in that time, he was arrested 3 times for cocaine possession, and he was on probation. In April of 1992, Aaron was a witness to a robbery, and he was scheduled to testify against this person. And one day he was installing a radio in his car and was shot in the butt while installing the stereo. And he staggered away. He was bleeding profusely. He walked up to someone who was trying to call the police and just collapsed on the ground. And of course, he was fine. They got to him in time and he recovered. But it did, he claimed that that was when he lost trust in. When he recovered from that, he stayed with his brother for a little bit, but that didn't last long and he went out on his own again. He would barricade himself into his room and feel sorry for himself. He felt like he was rejected by everyone he knew, but he wouldn't ask why. So one day, and this is, he's at the pet store now. One day, he says he got an urge. He went outside and he said that he felt like, who cares? That's a quote. So he saw a sex worker walking down Marlboro Pike and he approached her. He scared her and was able to make her get into the woods. At that time, he raped her. Then he left. After that, he said he felt like an animal and he didn't care. So he was so upset that no one was paying attention to him. And that's the reason that he raped someone. And, apparently it's everyone's fault. But he went back to his makeshift home and he went to sleep. He says that when he woke up, he felt horrible, sad, scared, and ashamed. He knew what he did was wrong. And then he did it about 17 times and claimed that he felt the same way each time before and after. He said he knew what he was doing was wrong, but he couldn't help himself. And at no point did he ever ask for help. So there's not much information between that time and this time period that I'm going to go over right now. In 1994, Aaron was able to get his commercial driver's license, or CDL. He got a job driving a truck for a soft drink distributor. And on one of his routes in the summer of 94, he took notice of Jewel Hicks. He yelled something out the window as he was driving by, and she looked up and saw him. Later, she would say, I guess he liked what he saw. So Aaron then continued on to his stop and was telling the man there about the woman that he had seen, and that turned out to be Jewel's father. I guess he made a good impression on her father because the father then introduced Aaron to Jewel, and they became inseparable. Hicks was a single mom. She had an infant son whose name was Jarrell Cruz, and he helped raise the boy. They lived together. Jewel said that Aaron was very neat, very fastidious, picked up after himself, made sure everything was clean. They got pregnant and they had a baby on 9/28 of 2000. That baby, it was a son. He did not survive. He died the same day. I do not know what he died from, and it doesn't say anything about abuse or anything like that. But Aaron's continued to dote on Jarrell. He would decorate Jarrell's bedroom. If Jarrell was in Spider-Man, he'd decorate as a Spider-Man. He would let him come with him on his driving duties at some points. He loved him very much. And from what Jarrell says, he was a great father figure and he respected him and he knew that he could trust him. He said that Aaron had a great sense of humor. One time when they were going to the movies, Aaron ran back to the house and came back out with a Jamaican wig on, and he took them to the movies, all the while being Jamaican. As Jarrell got older, he noticed some things about Aaron. Aaron would leave at night and he would come home with items, appliances, radios, stereos, anything. Jarrell suspected Aaron of being a thief, and Aaron and Jewel's relationship became tumultuous. He was overly protective of her. He did not like it when people talked to her, especially men, and he had an insatiable sex drive. So if it was possible for her to fight him off, to have him accept no for an answer, he would then leave. Later it was found that three rapes occurred within a half mile of their house during the time that they lived there. So Aaron felt that the rapes were because of rejection, feeling down, and things not going well in his life. So some of the times when he raped was in November of 2000. It was a month after his son died. And the rape happened close to the lumber company where he worked. And then in May of 01, a few weeks before Aaron was charged for assaulting Hicks and smashing her into a bathroom window because she had texted a man. Doesn't say what the text was about. And then in Leesburg, he was on the job. He stopped his truck at a gas station, parked, bought some cigarettes, and went walking through the neighborhood and found someone to rape. He went years without committing rape. There were no cases reported, but there probably were rapes during that time. And Jewel Hicks would say that Aaron was super smart, very intelligent, and had a lot of secrets. And he would say things to her like, "You don't want to know what I've done. If you knew what I've done, you wouldn't be here right now." And she would never follow up with that. So in Thanksgiving of 2003, Jewel and Aaron and Jarrell went to Aaron's parents' home for Thanksgiving. Big Don was there, and he pulled Aaron to the side and he said, "Here's the house keys. Take care of your mom," and barely spoke through the whole visit. So in February of next year, Big Don went into the garage, started up the engine in his car, sat in the passenger seat, and committed suicide. So they don't have much information on that. So in 2004, Jewel and Aaron were not getting along very well, and Aaron left Hicks. He moved in with his cousin Tara. He was still driving a truck, and he met Dorothy Golding. They had a baby boy on July 14th of 2005. But then they started fighting, and he would leave at night. On January 10th, there he was walking through the neighborhood and noticed an unlocked window. He noticed a mom with her baby. He waited until she put the baby to bed and went in and attacked her. He put a pillowcase over her head, and he said that he would kill the baby if she made any sounds. And if she, when he was done, he threatened her if she was going to contact the police, he would come back and kill her baby. In October of 2009, Aaron was needing a break. His relationship with Dorothy was over. He was back in his hometown. He was helping Jewel Hicks move. And while they were packing up, because Hicks was a reservist, so she would do army things, whatever they did. And in her stuff, she had a fake gun. It looked like a 9mm, but it turned out to be just a lighter. While she was taking a shower or something, Aaron grabbed that gun and got into her car and drove around. He drove around near his old house. He saw, and this was on Halloween, as he was driving around, he saw three girls trick-or-treating, and they were teenagers. So he found a place to park and walked up at the girls, started talking to them, and pulled out that gun. He forced them into the woods, told them to lay down. They had to lay down in the wet leaves. There was two 17-year-olds and a 16-year-old. As he was raping the 17-year-olds, the 16-year-old was able to text her mom. She said, "We're being attacked by a man. He's raping her friends. Call the police. We're behind the pharmacy." So as he's raping the girls, he hears the police coming. The police have swarmed the area. Aaron ran. He tossed the gun aside. He ran around the whole area and then calmly walked up to the car he arrived in and went home. Jewel asked where her gun was, and he told her that he had thrown it out in the woods. I'm not sure how she accepted that, but she did. She wanted it back because it had sentimental value. She had him take her back to where he threw it, and he got out of the car and went and looked for 45 minutes but couldn't find it. Apparently, there was some people still doing some investigating in the area. I don't know why, but it freaked Aaron out. And he got super nervous, and then he wanted to go back home. In the meantime, they had a good sketch of Aaron from one of the girls that he had raped. They put it up on billboards looking for him. And they got an anonymous call giving Aaron's name. His name had already popped up on the potential subjects or suspects list in February of 2011 because of other sex crimes and other crimes that he had committed. So after the billboards went up and they got that call, he was now at the top of the list, and the police started following him. At the time they started following him, Aaron was currently facing charges for theft of a bicycle. So police and U.S. Marshals were following him at the time. He was super paranoid. And during a break in the court hearing, he went outside to smoke. And he tossed that cigarette on the ground and they snatched it up. They then got his DNA. In March of 2011, Aaron was thinking that something was up. He called his family, his mom and his brother, and told them about the trouble with the bicycle. That was on March 3rd. March 4th, he goes to get on a bus. Police found him there and swarmed the bus. When they got to him, they said they were taking him in for arrest. Aaron said, "What took you so long?" He claims he was filled with relief. He was choking back tears. He told them about every rape that he could remember, supposedly. He says that he was hoping they could tell him why he did these things. So in one of his confessions, he claims that his alter ego, Erwin, is the person that did the rape, the actual rape. They decided to, his, you know, attorneys, of course, tried to go for an insanity defense. The trial in July was continued so that they could build up their insanity defense. So late October, the attorneys let the court know that they were no longer pursuing an insanity defense. And Aaron talked to reporters. He told them about Erwin and that, you know, Erwin was the real person. On June 10th of 2012, Judge Mary Grace O'Brien told Aaron that there would be no second chance at mental competence. There is no insanity defense and you will be tried as normal. So Aaron went ahead and called the Post and said, "There's no Erwin. I made it up." So that was the end of his dual personality excuse. In the courtroom, Aaron could not even look at the people that were accusing him. He laid on the table, his forehead pressed against the table. He claims that he felt so much shame and sickness and sadness for what he had done to these people. Aaron's mom was unable to listen to the testimony. She had a daughter herself, who she would often tell, "Don't go jogging in this area." She would make sure that her daughter was protected. And then she finally realized that her son was the person that she was afraid of for her daughter. I can't imagine how that would feel as a mom, knowing that your son is causing damage to girls. You know, when you have a daughter yourself, I mean, it's just horrible. So Aaron claims that after seeing the victims in court, he finally sees them as real people. And he says, "I understand I need to be punished. Now tell me what the hell is wrong with me." And I don't know if anyone's ever been able to tell that. I think at a certain point in your life, for people who are sociopaths or psychopaths, they are too busy blaming others for their problems. They are not able to take responsibility for their actions. And I don't know if you can get therapy for that to help that, to conquer it. Aaron got 2 life sentences. And then there's 17 other rapes that have been attached to him through DNA. So he is going to be in jail for the rest of his life. Thank goodness, right where he needs to be. I did get my information from Reuters.com and the Washington Post and Wikipedia and FBI.gov. The DNA was testing was performed by Connecticut State Forensic Science Lab, and they did an excellent job stopping everything and making sure that all of those cases were able to be included in his sentencing. There was a lot of kudos going out to them. Anyway, that is the end of that story. Please let me know what you think. I will get this posted as soon as I can. I miss Cheryl. You guys probably did too. So, Cheryl, I love you, and I'll see you the next time that you're on here. In the meantime, her and I are going to try to start a gaming channel. We're both kind of video gamey people, but we're also old, and we also scream a lot. We're going to try our hand at some fun games. And when that happens, I will let you know what our channel is. I don't know that you'd be interested, but maybe you know someone who might be. Anyway, any help you can give us would be appreciated. I would love to hear from you at twomurdermamas@gmail.com. I will also have photos of Erin up on our Instagram at twomurdermamas. And you guys have a great week. I will talk to you in about a week. All right. Love you. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Don't kill anyone. Or I'm going to be talking about you. Bye-bye. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3, 5, 9.
Okay.
I was reading.